Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jen Wolf. That's Nick Wright. That is Chris Canty filling in for Chris Garter. Good news, we only have to remember one different name because apparently only Chris is filling for Chris Carter that was in his contract.
I'm going to just say this. I can get used to this. Came to the office this morning, got a fresh edge up. Somebody went and got coffee for me.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Things are pretty nice. Got my jacket steamed.
It's all downhill after that. That's it. They suck up to you. Then they throw you out to the wolves to do the show.
They treat us nice here. And by the way, the reason Chris Carter's off on this Friday before NFL season beginning is because Chris is calling the Titans-Dolphins game
on Sunday.
And you know who's doing sideline for that game? Our friend Sarah Kustoff.
Yep,
so that's a,
nice a
game.
Team.
If you're a First Things First fan, if you can check out, you should do that.
Chris Carter, and Sam Rosen, and Sarah Kustoff.
Absolutely.
But we are so happy to have you here. We've loved your insight all along, so it should be a fun 3 hours. A lot to get to on the program. Tom Brady starts his quest for a sixth Super Bowl. Dak Prescott looks to enter year three on the right foot. But we start with the NFL season opener. Last night's game between the Eagles and the Falcons. It was a rematch of last year's NFC divisional game. And like last year, the Eagles won. This time, thanks to two touchdowns from Jay Ajayi. Like last year, Matt Ryan and the Atlanta offense stalled out in the red zone multiple times, including during the final possession. The Eagles offense ran that play, much sputtering, so much behind Nick Foles, they had to dust out the Philly special again. After the game, Foles discussed what went into that decision.
Honestly, we were both thinking the same thing at the same time. I went over there to talk to him and say this might be a good time, and he pointed to the call sheet, and I was like, that's what I was coming over here for. So it, worked again.
The biggest thing, again, no panic on the sideline, resiliency, toughness, hanging with each other through all the, kind of the ups and downs, the ebb and flow of the game, the mistakes, the penalties, turnover. Just the guys hanging together. Again, there was no panic tonight.
So when you get your chances against a good defense like that, you've got to capitalize on your opportunities. So disappointed. I thought we battled. We fought like crazy. We knew it was going to be a tough game coming in here. It was going to be in a 60-minute game. It was that way. But it's disappointing to not leave here with a win.
Look, guys, this wasn't a great game by either team in this one. Certainly not the way they wanted to come out. We found out before the game Carson Wentz could be out several weeks. So, Nick, I start with you. Are you confident in the Eagles and in Nick Foles after what you saw last night?
Oh, I'm not confident in Nick Foles at all. Not at all. My level of confidence in Nick Foles is about where it was when Carson Wentz got hurt the first time or when he got hurt initially. And I said, well, now you're drawing dead to win a Super Bowl. You lose an MVP and go to Nick Foles. But I am as confident as ever in the players surrounding Nick Foles, most notably the guys on the other side of the ball. It wasn't just that the defense stymied what I think will be, red zone struggles notwithstanding, a very good Falcons offense, but they did it in brutal conditions. That game, it was 80 degrees at kickoff. It was hot, humid. You saw guys cramping up. Mm-hmm. And what were the Eagles able to do? Send wave after wave of defensive linemen out there. They were able to stymie the Falcons running attack. They made Matt Ryan look so bad that I was wondering if he is dealing with an injury. Mm-hmm. When you look at what the Eagles have coming up, having games against Tampa, Indianapolis, and a Titans team that I actually think the Titans could be good this year, in the next month, if that's about the timeline for Carson Wentz, that defense alone could be enough to win those games because Foles won't play worse than he played yesterday. His best play was a pass catch rather than a throw. So, no, I am not confident in Nick Foles, but I am confident in this Philadelphia Eagles team because mostly of the guys that play the position you used to, those defensive linemen.
Absolutely, and when you talk about competing for a championship, you have to have defensive linemen that can get after the quarterback. And you saw that pass rush on that last Atlanta Falcons drive.
Yes.
Those guys were getting after Matt Ryan. He didn't have a whole lot of time to set up and to go through the defense, through its progression, and make the right read. So when I look at this team, it's more so about the supporting cast, not Nick Foles, and the confidence that this group has based on what they were able to do last year. Doug Peterson said it in that little clip that we just played, this group didn't panic. After quarter, probably one of the worst quarters of football we've seen this offense play in the last couple of years, where they only had one total yard. That group came out in the second half. They were able to be productive, put together drives. You saw what Nick Foles was able to do in terms of facilitating the offense. He wasn't great last night. I think it was one of his worst performances as a starting quarterback for the Eagles, but you saw they did enough on the offensive end. The running game came to play, especially in the second half. Well, you talk about that. They only had 16 yards rushing in the first half. They ended up finishing with over 120 yards rushing. So that's, to me, the biggest part of this thing, being complementary to the strengths of this team, which is the offensive line and the defense.
And that's where I want to give you credit. You said yesterday, because I was talking about how good I think the Atlanta front seven can be, and you talked about the size differential between the Eagles offensive line and even a talented Atlanta front seven, an undersized Atlanta front seven. And you said if they're leaning on you throughout the game, come the second half, that's when you can get tired if you're a defensive lineman. That's when that offensive line can start to create holes. And that's what I saw. I didn't think Jay Ajayi was markedly better one half to the next, but the holes were there. He had more opportunities because the Falcons don't have the D-line rotation Philly has. They don't have the personnel. They don't have the size. And the Eagles were able to really impose their will. And everything did flip on, as you alluded to, a little variation of the Philly special. They actually ran the play,
the Patriots play,
the one that Tom Brady, where he couldn't make the catch. That's the play they ran. From that moment forward, their offense at least had a little bit of flow to it.
But is the team good enough? And we all both mentioned the supporting cast. Is that cast supporting enough that they could withstand Nick Foles and keep Carson Wentz out until he's ready to come back?
Well, I think they can do the job. If you're talking about a 6 to 8 game sample size for Nick Foles, I trust the supporting cast will be able to help him keep this team consistently competitive throughout that stretch. But when you look at the things that have success in the postseason, at the end of the regular season, it's the running game, it's defense, being able to stop the run, being able to get after the quarterback. This Philadelphia Eagles team can do those two things at a very high level, almost an elite level.
And I would be really concerned if the Eagles had the schedule the next 2 weeks the Falcons have. If the Eagles were about to play Carolina and New Orleans, I would say, okay, this could be a problem. But the Eagles are about to play Tampa and Indy. Like, two teams that Tampa's, I think, bad on both sides of the ball, and Indy certainly does not have the offensive personnel on the line to deal with that Eagles pass rush and doesn't have the defensive personnel on the line to deal with the Eagles offensive line. So that's where it really does matter who you have coming up.
All right, let's talk about the Falcons. How worried should this team be about what their offense looked like?
They should break glass in case of emergency. It's time to panic if you're an Atlanta Falcons fan just because they didn't play well in situational football. You look at those two opportunities they had on the first two drives of the game, the goal-to-goal situation. They were stopped on fourth down, didn't get any points out of that. They got back down there on the next possession.
Again, yeah.
Only had to settle for a field goal. You can't keep coming up short against really good teams in those situations. The Falcons missed an opportunity to flip the complexion of that game. All of a sudden, if you're talking about them converting on those two drives and scoring touchdowns, the Eagles are down 14-0, and it's a little bit of panic in that building because it's an offense that hasn't been together the entire preseason. They have not played well. They didn't score a touchdown the entire preseason. The Atlanta Falcons missed an opportunity to put a lot of pressure on Nick Foles and that Philadelphia Eagles team, and they didn't convert. So otherwise, they would have had a chance to be in that game and win that game.
In my eyes, this was worse than losing 31-3 because you lost due to your inability to do something that you said all offseason was your priority to fix. I'm not some oracle. All week leading up to this game, what have I said? This team was great at everything last year offensively except for third downs and really particularly the red zone. For a top five caliber offense to be bottom eight in the league in the red zone. For their season to end because they were bad in the red zone. And first and goal from the 9 against Philly and you only throw one ball into the end zone. And what did we see yesterday? 5 red zone trips. One touchdown, you got the full list. One touchdown, one field goal, one pick, one turnover on downs, one turnover because the game ended. Some of it was Matt Ryan was bad. Some of it was he made the wrong read. But some of it is, how about that first trip in the red zone? You run 4 plays. Julio Jones isn't even on the field.
Yeah.
He's not even on the field. Your second trip in the red zone. Okay, you have Julio on the field, but you don't throw him the ball once. And now we look holistically at the last 2 years. Matt Ryan, when throwing the ball into the end zone to Julio Jones, is 1 of 20?
Yeah.
1 of 20? Like, so part of that's on Julio, but a lot of that's on Matt Ryan, and a lot of it's on Steve Sarkisian. Like, this was, if you remember the when the Cavs were playing the Raptors, it's going to seem like an odd thing to pull on, but from the end of the regular season, and the Raptors were up huge, and the Cavs came all the way back and won. And I said that was the worst way to lose because it reminded you of what your deficiencies were. To lose this game with a first and goal inside the 10, the way you lost your season, and to be in that position because you couldn't convert other first and goals. All losses are not created equal.
Right.
This was the worst, barring injuries, this was the worst way for the Falcons to start their season because they told us all offseason, this is what we're working on. Okay, well, you got to work smarter, you got to work harder, you got to work better somehow because you look like a bad offense once you get inside the 20, and everywhere else on the field, you are marching up and down.
All right, so the Eagles beat the Falcons in the season opener. Believe it or not, Nick Foles now 6-1 as a starter.
He got himself $500,000 bonus last
for
night.
For Carson Wentz, 6-1.
New contract is treating him right.
We are going to talk much more about this game coming up, but on the other side, can Dak Prescott get the Cowboys back to the playoffs? That's next. This is First Things First.
Fox Sports Golf host Shane Bacon here, and with summer winding down, I wanted to tell all First Things First listeners about an exclusive offer from TeeOff.com. Instead of sitting around reading about all the expert opinions of the Hans redesign of TPC Boston, get out and play a round or two at Pine Hills Golf Club in Plymouth, Mass., a 36-hole facility containing two championship-style golf courses designed by Jack Nicklaus and Reese Jones, or you can tee it up at one of the thousands of great golf courses across the country on TeeOff.com by PGA Tour, the official tee time reservation site of the PGA Tour. And you can do so without booking fees. That's right, no booking fees. Every course, every tee time. Plus, as a valued listener to my podcast, The Clubhouse with Shane Bacon, you'll get to save an additional 25% on deal times with the single-use promo code TeeOffBacon. And hey, if you're a golf fan, come on over and give my podcast a listen, The Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. We try to make golf not so, you know, golfy. That's the goal, right? The Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. It's golf, but without all the rules. Okay, back to First Things First.
Welcome back. So Fox Sports has teamed up for the win for the College Football Fan Index. Each week, you, the fans, will be ranking college football experiences, and we are kicking it off with the best stadium. Vote on Twitter or Instagram with the hashtag FanIndex, plus the hashtag for your school, and you can learn more at collegefootballfanindex.com. The winner will be revealed on Fox tomorrow before that big UCLA-Oklahoma game. So far, Georgia is leading for best stadium. So I ask you, gentlemen, your favorite stadium.
Well, this is a really cool thing our friends at For the Win are doing, and you can check it out online. Listen, I'm going to go, maybe it's too easy, but I'm going with Death Valley.
Hold on. Which Death Valley?
Oh, that's a good question.
Which Death Valley?
Go Tigers. LSU's Death Valley.
Stop it. The real Death Valley is in South Carolina, the Clemson Tigers. When they're coming down off that hill, it's a different ball
so
game.
So we're both going with Death Valleys.
I'm just saying, I'm speaking from experience. It's a tough place to play.
Okay, so yeah. I say LSU, you say Clemson. Jenna Wolf?
My own Death Valley, which is my apartment, trying to get the kids out.
I'm what's confused. Your
you laughed. That sounds like a real one. Yeah. He hasn't laughed in a year. Horseshoe, Ohio State.
Oh!
We spent the year, last year, we were out there
the
in Columbus.
Ohio State Penn State
game. That was a lot of fun.
That was an intimidating environment. But I feel like the Ohio State fans are less likely to just turn on you like the fans in Louisiana are.
It's a little bit different when you go to the South to a college football game. Just saying, just putting it out there.
Inside the stadium, outside the stadium. Yeah. So, all right, yeah. And Ohio State, not on the list, not in the top five.
Not yet.
Buckeye fans.
Not yet.
Start voting. Really cool.
All right, let's move on. We are going to get to Dak Prescott and the Cowboys in just seconds. But first, Philly with another trick play to Nick Foles. Dele, dele, and Philly, Philly. And yet it kind of wasn't that play, but that's what they called it, the Philly special, guys.
No, I mean, this is a little salt to the Pats because that was supposed to be Tom Brady in the Super Bowl catching the ball and making a big play because that's the play they're running there, Canny. Not the Philly special from last year, but the Pats attempt at that.
Well, listen, that was the best option that Doug Peterson had for a play call in that situation because everything he was calling until that point, it wasn't working.
Nelson Aguilar, the best healthy quarterback on the Eagles.
Say that same game, handoff to Julio Jones and a vicious stiff arm.
You, sir, have a seat.
I mean,
yeah, right here.
Julio's so good. And, I mean, they couldn't guard him. And on the very next play after this, they ran the same action. Philly was afraid enough that Julio was getting the ball again that the running back who they actually Devontae Freeman gashed him for, I think, his longest game of the night. Julio was awesome.
Finally, here in New York, Ben Simmons misses the layup, but there's LeBron to put the putback back in.
I could have been there to watch this, but I was doing a hit with my friend Colin Cowherd, the sacrifices I make for friends and family at FS1. And the whole NBA is just hanging out in New York this week. Listen. Dame and Russ were there day before yesterday.
All right, moving on to the Dallas Cowboys. They are in Carolina Sunday to face the Panthers. They'd like to move on after last year's disappointing 9-7 season where they missed the playoffs and where Dak Prescott missed his 2016 stellar form. Great in year one was Dak, regressed in year two, and here we are in year three. Dak knows that in order for his team to win, he has to improve.
I know I'll be better. I'm just learned so much from last year. Just moving forward, matured within the game. Just learned a lot more that I didn't know last year or that I wasn't as comfortable with. Just reads, my game, my footwork, accuracy and consistency, everything.
All right, Chris, let's talk about this Sunday's game as a measuring stick for Dak Prescott. How much of it will it be in his matchup against the Panthers?
Well, I think a lot of this is going to be on Dak in terms of being able to find the matchups and get the ball to the guys in one-on-one coverage and let them do the heavy lifting in this offense. You know that the Carolina Panthers are a single high team on defense. They're going to drop a safety down in the box. So it's going to be up to Dak Prescott to get his pre-snap read when he gets to the line of scrimmage and know where he wants to go with the football. But in listening to him in that clip and trying to figure out what he learned last year, I'm sure that he learned that he's not the quarterback he thought he was coming off of that 2016 season without number 21 in the backfield. You can tell that Zeke Elliott makes a difference in that offense. The first three games of the suspension from Zeke, Dak Prescott had 8 turnovers, and you can't expect to have the success that the Dallas Cowboys want when your young quarterback is turning the football over like that. This team is not built to come from behind. This team is not built to throw the ball 35, 40 times a game. So Dak Prescott needs to understand what their formula for success is, and it starts with number 21.
But against the Carolina Panthers, against this year's Carolina Panthers, I do not think they can win without some explosive plays through the air. I do not think this can be Zeke, 27 carries, 135 yards, and that's the pure path to victory, because I don't think Zeke can get 135 yards, as great as Zeke is against this front. Even without Thomas Davis due to the suspension, with Kawan Short, with Luke Kuechly, with we know how good. I think the biggest
Dontari Poe,
who they brought in this offseason, who's a former first-round pick out of the University of Memphis. I saw him in Kansas City for early parts of his career. Then he went to Atlanta and played well for them. Like I know they lost star Latulale, but they replaced him with Poe. Like the Panthers front seven is too strong, and I would add their secondary is too suspect to not try to take some shots through the air. And so this is where it is a tough way to start the year if you're the Cowboys in my eyes, because all year long we have said, wait, who are their tight ends? Who are their wide receivers? Mm-hmm. And this is a game where those who are they guys have to come up huge.
That's why it's going to be a big game for a guy like Allen Hurns and for Dak Prescott to find him early, because you said all along this is not going to be about what Zeke can do, but about what Dak Prescott and opening up this offense can do.
No, you're absolutely right, Jenna. And I think it's going to be more about the receivers outside the numbers than inside the numbers, because the Carolina Panthers do a great job with their interior defenders in matching up in those intermediate and deep zones in the middle of the field. The Panthers want to protect the middle of the field. That's something that their head coach, Ron Rivera, who's a defensive guy, believes in. So you're going to have to be able to attack outside of the numbers. But I think for Dak Prescott, the key to that is knowing where he wants to go with the football before the ball is even snapped.
I think that knowing where you want to go pre-snap is going to be huge for him, because especially when you can't rely on these guys to get late separation, like they're going to have to be open early and often, because Dak, we haven't seen his ability to throw guys open. But a big part of the discussion this offseason has been the Cowboys getting Zeke involved in the passing game, right? Mm-hmm. Again, tough matchup when Luke Kuechly's tracking everybody down. Who's going to step up big for the Cowboys as a tight end? That is not where there's going to be gaps in this defense. Like, you don't have a tight end that's a Jimmy Graham type that's going to be a vertical option, wide receiver playing tight end. It would be more the Jason Witten style, like button hook short. That middle of the field is going to be congested and full of monsters. Like, you are going to have to beat them on the outside, or The other option for Dallas is you're going to have to force Cam into one of those awful games.
Yes.
I mean, and that is a real possibility here.
Because Cam Newton is up and down.
Absolutely. And so I talked about yesterday how Cam, when he has a pass rating over 100, his team's record is on par with Rodgers, Brady, Manning, when they have passer ratings over 100. But we also know he might have a passer rating under 75. He has those games. If DeMarcus Lawrence, if Jalen Smith, if Sean Lee can do what I'm talking about Luke Kuechly doing as far as take Greg Olsen out of the game and you can force Cam into some mistakes and some turnovers, that can make it so you don't have to have the big explosive plays if you're starting a possession on the other team's 25, on the other team's 30, because you forced a turnover. That's the other key here. How many mistakes can the Cowboys front seven force Cam Newton into?
And I think one of the ways that we can answer that question is determined by how productive Christian McCaffrey is going to be.
Yes.
Because you heard the word out of Carolina. They want to have him more involved in the offense. A top 10 pick from 2 years ago. They want to get him 20 to 25 touches a game. And so if he's having one of those productive games and that Panthers offense is able to stay on schedule, that means probably less mistakes for Cam Newton. But one of those things that you have to look for with Dak Prescott in his matchup is his response. Responsibilities at the line of scrimmage beyond just knowing where to go with the football based on the coverage you're getting. Remember, Travis Frederick is out this game, so Joe Looney is going to be the center. How much of the protection scheme is going to be called by him versus what Dak Prescott's going to have to do in the huddle and at the line? So it's something to consider when you're looking at this talented Carolina Panthers front seven.
All right, let's pause for a second. Time now for Nick Wright's Fantasy Update, sponsored by DraftKings. Nick, you're picking week one tight ends today. Give us one stud and then give us one value pick.
All right, the stud is an easy pick, maybe too easy of a pick. Rob Gronkowski.
Shocker.
I know he costs $6,900. It's an odd number, but it's also the highest of any tight end on DraftKings. It's appropriate for Gronk. It's perfect. Listen, they are playing the Houston Texans this week. We know Edelman's not there. We know that we are – is it Cordarrelle Patterson on the outside? Is it the Philip Dorsett? No, it's going to be a heavy dose of Rob Gronkowski. Bite the bullet. Pay that money. Rob Gronkowski is the easy pick. Now
– the value pick.
If you're looking for a value pick, I know he's been maybe bumped down the depth chart a little bit. But I like Jack Doyle in Indianapolis. Andrew Luck.
I like it.
Andrew Luck. Coming back. He always loved Jack Doyle. He talks lovingly about Jack Doyle as if he's a brother. If things break down in Indy, he'll look for Jack Doyle. He's only $3,600 on DraftKings. So if you're spending your money elsewhere, I think that's good value. And I like the matchup against Cincinnati. Especially Cincinnati, remember, no perfect patrolling the middle. So I like that as value for DraftKings.
Football on Fox, starting with UCLA taking on Oklahoma. And at night, USC faces Heisman hopeful Bryce Love and Stanford. It all kicks off at 12:30 Eastern on Fox, or watch anywhere on the Fox Sports app.
That is a huge early season Pac-12 game. Even though it's two different divisions, like those are arguably maybe the two best teams in the Pac-12 playing each other this early. It's a huge game.
I don't respect Pac-12 athletics.
Oh, my God. Wow.
All right, so
Hot take.
To start your morning. There are a number of reasons Dak Prescott needs a good year for the sake of the Cowboys and for the sake of a big contract. Dak can get a contract extension after this season. He said it's kind of known. All that stuff will come. It's not anything I worry about. Nick, how important is this season if Dak does indeed want to get paid?
Oh, I mean, it's critically important because if he looks anything like he did last year, then I'm waiting.
Well, I think it's a show and prove for Dak Prescott this year, and I think Jerry Jones in the front office for the Dallas Cowboys, they're going to wait and see how the team turns out this year. If they have a good season, get to the divisional round or later, Dak Prescott will have that big check waiting on him.
100, but if they miss the playoffs and he looks like he did last year, then he's playing out that rookie deal, and then we'll see from there.
All right, moving on to the Colts now. Andrew Luck playing the Bengals this weekend, his first game since the 2016 season. Chris, what do you expect from Andrew Luck on Sunday?
Well, I expect to see the Andrew Luck that we saw quarterback his team to the AFC Championship. I think he's going to get back to that point. Now, it's obvious that it's going to be a little rust early in the regular season, but I think once he gets a feel for it, the first couple of drives in this game against this Bengals team without Vontaze Burfict, Andrew Luck will start to get in the rhythm. I expect him to be good this Sunday.
Man, everybody seems to think Andrew Luck's going to, maybe take him a quarter or two and get right back to his old self. I'm a little more cautious with it. Now, I think most people agree with you. I want to see him again. I'm worried about Andrew Luck being healthy throughout the year. I think eventually he'll get back to his old form, but I think it will take maybe 2 to 3 months rather than 2 to 3 quarters. So I don't have very high expectations for this game. Now, the Colts could win anyway because the Bengals aren't very good and they're missing their best defensive player.
All right, let's move on to Minnesota now. Kirk Cousins making his Vikings debut against Jimmy G and the 49ers this weekend. Nick, what do you expect to see from Kirk Cousins in this one?
This could be a stat game for Kirk. That 49ers defense, they have a good front, but other than that, a lot of question marks. I don't think they have anyone that can match up with the duo of wide receivers they have in Minnesota. And listen, this is his first opportunity to show why they moved on, not only moved on from Case, but gave him a fully guaranteed contract. I expect Kirk Cousins to be very good this weekend.
Listen, I'm a little concerned about Kirk Cousins only because there are two interior offensive linemen that are missing for the Vikings. Nick Easton's out for the season. Pat Elflein's going to be out. So Brett Jones is going to be filling in for him. They make the sneaky good move for him to get him from the Giants during the preseason. But I'm concerned about that offensive line and the chemistry up front. If that group, especially on the interior, can't protect him, it could be tough for Kirk Cousins.
And that's the only question mark in my eyes about the Vikings this year, that O-line.
All right, finally, Matt Ryan had a tough game last night. He completed less than half of his passes, couldn't find Julio Jones on the final play of the game yet again. All right, Chris Kenny, how concerned were you with Matt Ryan's performance in this one?
I'm really concerned with Matt Ryan's performance. I mean, he was 1-9 in the red zone and 0-3 in the red zone when targeting Julio. And he had the interception, as you mentioned, Nick. So, I mean, it comes back to being good in situational football. If you can't take advantage of opportunities at point-blank range to score touchdowns rather than settling for field goals, you're going to struggle to win and compete at the level that the Falcons expect to. I mean, they handed Matt Ryan an $150 million contract this offseason, and so far, the return on investment is not what they hope for.
Yeah, and obviously the sample size is tiny, but this was a terrible game by him. I mean, just there's no way around it. He, on passes not to Julio Jones, he was 11 of 24 for 82 yards. And even on, listen, Julio had, what, 169 yards receiving?
Yep.
Julio was Julio, but even on passes to Julio Jones, how about the pass that could have been the game-winning touchdown that he sails out the back of the end zone when Julio's double-covered? How about the pass that could have been the game-winning touchdown that should have ended the game if not for a very soft illegal contact penalty that he sails 2 yards out the back of the end zone? Or the final play of the game, Julio, it could have been Inspector Gadget. He can't come down inbounds and make that catch. Like, I watched that game and I thought, man, we're going to hear sometime this week that Matt Ryan got dinged in this game. Whether it's true or not.
So when he slid and broke the brace, maybe that situation?
That something was wrong with him physically. Because while I don't think Matt Ryan's the caliber of quarterback that I would be comfortable paying $30 million a year for five years, he is clearly one of the 10 best quarterbacks in football. I mean, he's 2 years removed or a year and a game removed from a league MVP and quarterbacking one of the best offenses ever. He looked nothing like it yesterday, and it can't just be because Philly's got a great defense.
But let me ask you another question, something we brought up earlier this week. Matt Ryan and Julio Jones and Devontae Freeman, a lot of their big weapons, didn't play at all preseason. This was Dan Quinn's big plan. Keep them fresh, let them come out that first game, and you'll really see what they have. Can you factor any of that decision in? I think Chris Mortensen tweeted last night, oh, this goes against everything Bill Parcells ever preached. Mm-hmm. You know, hold them out of the preseason and see what they could do. You need to play the preseason. How would you respond to that?
I think the reps are more important for the offense than the defense, and I think that's why both defenses shined last night. And when you look at what the Falcons offensively were, you saw that they didn't have the balance that they were hoping for. They only had 74 yards rushing on the ground. This team, when they're really good, they're more of a balanced offense. You're probably talking about 120 yards on the ground and then Matt Ryan being able to throw for over 200 yards. But because they didn't have the balance, because they weren't good in situational football, because they were 4-15 on third down, and two of those conversions were in the last drive, I mean, this is a situation where this team, because of the experience that they have, you would expect more from them in a season opener. So, yeah, there could be a little bit of rust from the preseason, but this talent on this offense is too good to have that kind of performance last night.
Rust or no rust, they should have been better than last night. But I think it's a great point by you, Jenna, bringing up what Mort tweeted about Parcells, because I saw that as well. It made me think of our friend Chris Carter, because he and I, a year ago, went to war on this. I said, if you know they're a starting player, if you know they're an established player, I would not dust them off until week one of the regular season. And I am starting to really evolve on that point, because I want to see how the rest of week one looks. You know who I want to see how they look? The Rams, mm-hmm. who didn't play any Gurley, Goff. They're big guys in the preseason.
Point.
Because it is important to come into the year healthy, but if you are sacrificing, if you could start the year 2-1, and you start the year 1-2, like, that's sometimes the difference between making the playoffs, not making the playoffs, home field advantage, not having home field advantage. And the Falcons did not look like a team that was fully operational last night. Now, again, I want to give the Philly defense a ton of credit, but, like, the pass Matt Ryan made that got picked off to Julio Jones, that was either a brutal miscommunication between two guys who have played together for nearly a decade, or just he wasn't sharp enough. Like, I don't – so either way, I'm – the more I see the beginning of the season look like the offenses are stuck in the mud.
Yeah.
26 penalties. You told me this morning that would have been the most in any game all of last season.
Yes.
And so, like, all of it looked like these guys needed more practice. And they had an opportunity for it. Now, maybe I'd be saying it differently if in the week 2 of the preseason, Julio Jones blows his knee and their season's over. But if you start off, they got Carolina and New Orleans the next 2 weeks. They better be sharp here pretty damn quick.
Nick Wright says extend the preseason.
No,
that's what he said.
Maybe make better use of the preseason.
There you go.
Or utilize it at all. Hey, moving on. Why is the Steelers-Browns game a must-watch this weekend? Well, for one thing, the Steelers are replaying the drama that played out last year, looking for Le'Veon Bell. Still hasn't shown up. So Pittsburgh going with James Conner to fill in as running back. No pressure, James. Then there are the Browns, retooled and looking for their first win since 2016. Browns head coach Hugh Jackson says he's not concerned about the drama in Pittsburgh.
Listen, they can beat each other up for all we care. It don't matter. There's no, whatever comes out of Pittsburgh is in Pittsburgh. We know what the focus is for us. It's not about Le'Veon not being there or what their team feels or thinks. It's about what we do on Sunday. To me, we just got to go play. We're not going to worry about them that way.
All right, so the obvious question heading into this game is going to be how big of a drop-off is there between Le'Veon Bell and James Conner, who Le'Veon Bell, who knows when he's going to show up. Mm-hmm. So now all signs have to point towards James Conner as the running back on this team.
So how big is the drop-off?
How big?
It's enormous. I mean, we have to stop pretending like great players aren't great players. Mm. And we have to stop pretending like teams don't act in their own best interest. What do I mean by that? If the Steelers thought, after seeing James Conner for a year, after seeing James Conner in some of the offseason program, that James Conner was 70% of the player of L. Bell, they would not franchise tag L. Bell.
Exactly.
L. Bell is accounting for $14.5 million of their $200 million salary cap. So you're allocating 7% of your cap to a player. Why? Because you think he adds that much value. The Steelers need another inside linebacker. Mm-hmm. The Steelers might need a safety. The Steelers certainly could use another outside linebacker as well, I would add. Like, you could go spend that money elsewhere if you think you have any close facsimile to L. Bell and James Conner. They know they don't. Now, they can speak a big game now, but if James Conner is close to L. Bell, then the hell are you paying this guy $15 million for?
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. We just don't know how big the drop-off is because we don't know what James Conner is. But I do believe that James Conner will be serviceable enough in a running back's role because this offensive line and the skill position players are just that talented with this team. But when you talk about what you're trying to do this season, the Steelers are trying to win a championship. So to me, when it comes to winning at the highest level, who is the ultimate chess piece when you have him in the backfield? It's Le'Veon Bell, because he can do all of the things that a traditional running back can do, but you can also detach him from the formation, and he can be a matchup nightmare in terms of trying to cover him because he runs routes like a receiver. I'm pretty sure that James Conner can't run routes like Le'Veon Bell. So it's definitely going to be a difference with L. Bell not being in the lineup for this team.
But how much does the game plan change? How much more now goes to Antonio Brown? How much more does this open up?
Well, listen, of course I think they're going to be more pass-heavy now and pass-heavy to wide receivers as opposed to pass-heavy to Le'Veon Bell. But I think it's more notable about how the game plan changes for Cleveland. It becomes so much more simple. It becomes so much easier. You now, with what Le'Veon Bell does, which makes him so dangerous, is when he's on the field, you have no idea. It doesn't tell you anything. No. You have no idea what Pittsburgh's going to do. There's certain guys when you see him on the field, like, oh, okay, this is a blocking tight end in the game. Like, we know he's not getting the ball. We know L. Bell can be split out. He can be handed the ball. You can do anything with him. And so now you can focus more of your attention on Antonio Brown. You can focus more of your attention on stopping the vertical passing game. And so it's, to me, schematically going into a game, it's a huge edge to be faced, even if Connor's excellent, facing a one-role running back rather than El Bell, who might be the best two-role running back in the league.
I think the biggest difference will show up when the sub-package for the defense is on the field. When you talk about the nickel and dime groups, Greg Williams loves to run those exotic blitzes, but what that does, that puts a lot of people in man coverage. You can't have a linebacker in man coverage exactly with Le'Veon right. Bell in that situation. So I think you'll see Greg Williams be a little more aggressive in his game plan and trying to go after the head of the snake, which is Ben Roethlisberger, and a big reason why he'll be able to do that is because Le'Veon Bell won't be in that backfield.
That's the key for the Browns to upset the Steelers?
The key for the Browns to upset the Steelers is we come out of this game and say, that's Myles Garrett. The key for the Browns to upset the Steelers is that Myles Garrett, without needing blitzes, I think you're absolutely right. Yep. Greg Williams will send some blitzes. But on plays with a traditional four-man rush, that Myles Garrett puts Ben Roethlisberger on the ground. Like, I think that is the biggest key. And the second biggest key is that Jarvis Landry looks like the guy they think he is and that they brought him over to be. Those are the two ones that I would point to.
Yeah, your game record's got to show up in this, no doubt. Jarvis Landry and Myles Garrett got to be a big part of this. But also Carlos Hyde, the ground game. I think the Cleveland Browns, if they want to win this game, they've got to shorten the game. They've got to control time of possession. They've got to keep that high-powered Steelers offense on the sideline so they can't score any points.
And it doesn't just have to be Carlos Hyde. Duke Johnson and Nick Chubb, they have three, relatively speaking, high-drafted running backs from each of their respective draft classes in this backfield. And one other guy to watch. Like, it's not just that Todd Haley, I think, is a very smart offensive mind. Todd Haley was in Pittsburgh. His dad was a scout in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
He wanted to be in. He felt offensive coordinator for the Pittsburgh Steelers was a better job than a lot of head coaching jobs. He did a good enough job to keep that job. He's gone because Seven didn't want him there anymore. Mm. And so I don't know if you can coordinate with a chip on your shoulder, but if you can, Haley is. And so I would expect to see every last trick they can pull if they have a chance to pull off the upset. There is nothing I would put past Todd Haley to call in this game.
Do you think we see Josh Gordon in this game?
What? Oh, absolutely.
I think, yeah, you'll see Flash Gordon. No question about it. And that guy is as talented as any wide receiver in the league. I mean, he's right up there with Odell and Antonio. He's a really special talent. And he really changes the defensive looks as well. So he could help Tyrod Taylor out in a big way.
Kenny, Nick Wright thinks the Browns are heading to the playoffs this year.
I'm not going to throw that out. We'll discuss that more later.
Josh Gordon question is a great one because when he's on the field, Joe Hayden's going to have they're going to have to pick. Is Hayden covering Gordon or is he covering Landry? And that's where the Browns could get a bit of an edge.
They better stay in zone coverage if those two guys are on the field at the same time.
All right, we got to take a break. Coming up, who will win the matchup between Odell Beckham and Jalen Ramsey? Ramsey has something to say about it. Next on First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. Pro Bowl linebacker Bart Scott joins the show. Hey, Bart, welcome back.
Thanks for inviting me back. I didn't think I was coming back after the last
one. Oh, no, you were great, man. You were great. Now, in order to come back a third time, you have to tell me where you got that jacket.
I got a guy.
Okay.
You got a guy.
We can discuss that later.
I want a lot of testosterone on the set this morning. Just going to say it. Hey, among the must-see one-on-one battles this weekend, Odell Beckham versus Jalen Ramsey, Giants and Jags. Much has been made of the two All-Pros going at each other to start the year. Both a little brash, both a little excitable, both tremendous talents. Despite tweeting his excitement about playing Odell, Jalen Ramsey is now downplaying the face-off.
A lot of people are going to try to make it about me and him specifically. That's not what it's about. Football's a team game. It's going to be 11 guys out there for us, 11 guys out there for them. So we're going to have to come together and do what we got to do to try to get a win.
This is probably, if not the best, one of the best corners in the league. There's no way around it. And this defense that they have is, you know, they have 6-7 Pro Bowlers, maybe more on that team. They have a very good scheme. They're probably the best defense in the NFL. So we have a very tough challenge ahead of us. But I think we're all excited about the opportunity just to be able to come back, play football again. I know that I'm very excited, so it's definitely gonna be a good match.
Before you ask your question, Jenna, I hope everyone's happy. I hope my friend Chris Carter's happy. I hope all the old school media folks are like, this isn't how you act. You always respect your opponent. I hope you're happy. Because now we've neutered Jalen Ramsey. Odell is doing the same thing. Like, that is, I needed him barking. I needed him saying, I'm going to pull him by his yellow hair.
The audience should know that during that soundbite, three of these guys, all three of them were going like this.
I'm so upset.
Of you were so
we need Jalen. Don't let them do this to
you,
man.
That's rich. Didn't Jalen Ramsey, when Odell signed his big contract, tweet out something like, I'm looking forward to the showdown? Thought there was going to be some buildup here.
Nothing has changed. They're ready to get it. I'll tell you what, this is like the calm before the storm. They just don't want to provide any bulletin board material, but they're ready to go. And, you know, I think that the matchup is going to be an interesting matchup, but if I'm the Jacksonville Jaguars, I'm not even putting Ramsey on Odell. Don't look at me crazy. Listen, they got another corner that's A.J. Boye that is arguably, you know, top five corner as well. But sometimes you don't want to waste your number one guy on their number one guy, because no matter how great you are as a corner, no matter how great you are as a receiver, those two guys are talented. So they're going to win some. What you do is you double Odell with your second best corner, and you shut Shepherd down. And what happens is that makes them one-dimensional. I'm going to take this off because I don't know, it's not charging. It makes them one-dimensional. So what happens is you put all the pressure on Saquon Barkley, who hasn't played in the regular season and tested hamstring. I'm telling you what, we're going to find a lot out about Saquon Barkley because Talvin Smith got that hit stick.
Yeah, well, and so that is something we haven't discussed. The idea, and that is something
we haven't been on the show yet.
Thank you. But that's something we've seen, guys. The best corners in the league, I think fans think, should always trail the number one. Mm-hmm. But if you subscribe to the belief I do, which is typically not always, there's the outlier years, there's the one Revis year, there's a few where the number one guy matched up one on one with the number one receiver and he shuts them down week after week. But typically, great wide receiver against great corner, one on one advantage wide receiver.
Mm-hmm.
All the rules are for the offense. They know where they're going. Like, there's a lot of reasons they have the advantage there. But great wide receiver doubled. And then mediocre or unproven wide receiver against Jalen Ramsey. Now all of a sudden you're talking about being able to shut down both of them. The counterpoint would be if you put Jalen on Odell, AJ doesn't, then you don't have to double either one of them. If you think Jalen can handle Odell one-on-one, you know AJ Boye, because you're right, one of the best corners in the league, he can handle Sterling Shepard by himself, then you have a numbers advantage. Mm-hmm. Then you can dedicate an extra guy to Saquon Barkley, Evan Ingram, whomever it is, right? Yeah,
no, you're exactly right, but I don't know that you have to with the suspect right side of that Giants offensive line. But to your point, Bart, I think the X's and O's, that's probably the way that I would approach it. It's what we saw with Bill Belichick when he had Brandon Browner and Darrell Revis, a big physical corner to jam, and then doubled on the line of scrimmage, have your number one corner on their number two wide receiver. But beyond that, and looking at Odell Beckham Jr., he is so important to what the Giants want to do. And we know that Odell is an emotionally high-strung player, and that's when he's at his best. I worry a little bit about his maturation and those emotions getting a little bit out of control, because we've seen it before when he's matched up against a number one corner in 2015 going up against Josh Norman. And you saw how that affected that team. This Giants team, and Giants offense in particular, they take on the persona of Odell Beckham Jr.
But
if he gets frustrated because he's not being productive, it could be a problem.
And how do you get him frustrated? By putting two on him, so now you can be physical at the line of scrimmage. You can talk to him because you know you got backup. See, when you're Jalen Ramsey, you can't swing and miss. You can Sammy Sosa all day if you know you got that safety bracketing, and you start to swipe linebackers, you get in his head, you smack him around, you talk to him, you pull his hair, you pull his beard, all that stuff.
So basically what Jalen Ramsey did to A.J. Green last year.
Head and shoulders sucks.
The dumbest thing that Odell can do after proving everybody that he showed up at camp and the OTAs and just on getting his money and being just a model citizen is to come out and act like a fool and succumb to whatever it is Jalen Ramsey is going to do to him. But
Go ahead
before I ask my question.
Money only makes you more what you already are. He was putting on an act. I want to see if Odell Beckham would have showed up if they wouldn't have gave him the money. See, everything worked out so he can have that behavior and act like he's mature. You don't change that much that fast.
Interesting to see how.
And I apologize to interrupt you. No, the stuff that you're talking about, ab- absolutely will not matter if Odell wins this matchup. If Odell has 7 for $120 and a touchdown, then it does. He can be barking at Jalen the entire game. What can't happen is the A.J. Green situation, that Jalen is dominating you. You lose your cool. Forget getting kicked out of the game. That obviously can't happen. But to where you lose your cool and he gets the W. Now, this is what I think is so interesting about this matchup. There are paths for victory for the Giants without Odell having a great game. But if Odell has a great game, the Giants will win. Does that make sense?
Like, that makes sense.
That if Odell, if we're talking on Monday that Odell dominated this matchup, the Giants won the game. But if Jalen shuts him down, I still think the Jags are limited enough offensively and the Giants have enough other weapons, most notably Saquon. They could score 17 points, which might be enough, without Odell having a big game.
Is Ogletree in coverage?
What? That could be a problem. ASJ is banged up. Here's the thing. I'm looking at this matchup.
You know what I'm talking about.
I'm looking at this matchup, and I will say this, Jenna. You do have to be concerned about Odell Beckham Jr. and making sure that he keeps his emotions in check. But he has to be a factor, not necessarily have production in terms of the catches, touchdowns, and the yards, but he has to be a factor in terms of somebody that the defense has to deal with, because you got to create opportunities for all those other guys. Odell Beckham Jr. is the one guy on this Giants team that they can't afford to have a stalemate in his matchup.
Who is going to be more important in factoring the outcome of this game? Whatever Jalen Ramsey can do to Odell, or how big of a game Saquon Barkley can have?
It's got to be Saquon Barkley, because Eli's at his best when he's doing play action and throwing the ball down the field. He's not as accurate as he used to be on intermediate routes. He's a guy that likes to turn his back to the defense, locate the safety, and throw the ball deep down the field. We've seen it over and over, and you know, some of his greatest highlights are some of his best throws, but they're long throws. If Saquon Barkley can't get that safety to step up, they feel like, oh, we kicking this right side of the line, but we getting penetration, setting the edges, then they have no chance.
Kenny, you think the Jags are the best defense in football,
yes,
right? You think that at every level they've got star players, most notably D-line and secondary, but you mentioned Miles Jack. Like, it's not like they don't have linebackers.
Mm-hmm. Hit sticks.
Right, they got guys that will hit you in. They got help coming. They got Calais Campbell, who's your size, if not bigger. I mean, they've got monsters all over the field. We haven't seen Saquon Barkley in a football game since his first preseason game ever. Like, so the jump from college to pro is already significant, even a guy as talented as him. But he got as little exposure to the pro game as one could get in the preseason. Yep. How big of a challenge is that against any team, much less against maybe the best defense in the NFL?
Well, here's the thing. You have to worry about Saquon Barkley and protection and being able to pick up things in real time, in actual game speed. And it's a different speed from the preseason to the regular season. That Jacksonville Jaguars defense, they fly around, and you don't know where they're coming from. They got a lot of guys that can get after a lot of edge pressure players. And Saquon Barkley, in part in pass protection, is going to be responsible for some of those guys. I do get a little bit concerned with him missing all the time in the preseason about that aspect, that responsibility for him in this game plan.
I talk cash money stuff when I played. But when I didn't talk cash money stuff was the first game. You want to know why? Because it's the first time that you're playing at 1 o'clock. 1 o'clock, high heat. He's missed a lot of time. He, you know, everybody wants to talk about those lovely thighs. Eli loves him with his John Stockton shorts on in practice. But those things cramp up quickly. He's going to have to be on a pitch count. The humidity's going to be high. And then they're going to try and force the tempo on him. It's going to be tough for him to figure this out. I'm telling you what, those edges are going to be set. He's going to have to show and prove to me that he can put his foot in the ground and step on somebody's chest, because what I've seen is a cutback and a bouncer. You can't circle that defense because Calais Campbell's over there. He's going to abuse Soder.
Nick wears the John Stockton shorts.
But oh, yeah.
That's not true.
Got to take a break.
On,
Bart,
man.
Stick around. It is
I can stay. I can stay for two.
I don't want to believe that.
It is true. Hey, coming up, how badly do the Eagles need Carson Wentz back if they want a chance to repeat his chance? Back here, First Things First with Bart Scott. All right, so it wasn't pretty last night, but a win is a win, and the Eagles will take it. Philly beat the Falcons in the season opener thanks to 2 touchdowns from Jay Ajayi. Birds didn't get a lot from backup quarterback Nick Foles, only 114 yards, 0 touchdowns. The offense was sputtering so much they had to dust off a little tweak on the Philly special again. Nick Foles discussed what went into that decision.
Honestly, we were both thinking the same thing at the same time. I went over there to talk to him and said this might be a good time, and he pointed to the call sheet, and I was like, that's what I was coming over here for. So it, worked again.
Biggest thing again, just, again, no panic on the sideline, resiliency, toughness, you know, hanging with each other through all the, you know, kind of the ups and downs, the ebb and flow of the game, the mistakes, the penalties, turnover, you know, just the guys hanging together. Again, there was no panic tonight.
I think when you have a team like that, you know, throughout a tough game like this where there's not a lot of rhythm, I mean, that's, you know, that's how you have to win games. You lean on each other, you never turn on each other, and that's what's built here. That's the character of this team.
We should mention, we found out before the game, Carson Wentz could be out several weeks, not just the one or two I think we originally thought. But, Bart, let me ask you, are you confident in the Eagles and in Nick Foles after what you saw last night?
I don't believe you can consistently believe in Nick Foles. You know, whenever things have been expected of him, he hasn't lived up to expectations. You know, when he went to the Rams, he couldn't carry that team. And I think now people have seen what the Eagles want to do with him. You know, when they were struggling, they had to go to the RPOs because that's the only thing he's good at. I know that they're missing Alshon Jeffrey, so they weren't able to stretch the defense. But I just don't believe in what he's capable to do long term. So 7 weeks, they could be in trouble. I saw an offense that was anemic. I saw an offense that really couldn't find a rhythm, but also I saw a quarterback that couldn't really, you know, throw the ball on a rope. You know, he struggled last year with throwing a ball over 10 yards, but then everybody started packing the defense in, and he had some success later in the year.
You saw a quarterback that looked like a mediocre backup. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what he looked like yesterday, and that's what he looked like for the majority of his time up until Case Keenum threw a pick six in the NFC Championship game. That stadium erupted, and he was touched by Jesus. Like, from that moment forward, he played seven quarters of brilliant football, and no one will ever be able to take that away from him. Nope. He's a champion. He's a Super Bowl MVP. Those records he holds as far as back-to-back performances in the two biggest games of the year, those will stand the test of
his
time.
Life.
And, well, of anyone's life.
Yeah.
And he won a Super Bowl against Tom Brady when Brady threw for 500 yards. He gets all that. But that doesn't help you at all next week or the week after, and it sure as hell didn't help him last night. Like, so what's my confidence in Nick Foles? None whatsoever. But what's my confidence in the Eagles? Man, they held Atlanta under 13 points again. In the last 40 games, the Falcons, what are you laughing at, Bart?
I listened to you guys earlier and talking about, you know, Matt Ryan and his inability to complete passes. They got one of, listen, I got a nice little Dodge Challenger. Mm-hmm. And it's just like the Falcons offense is like a Dodge Challenger. Hellcat, okay. 707 horses. They gave it to a guy that can't drive a stick.
Okay.
Steve Sarkisian is horrible.
Well, listen,
why would you hire a guy that lost a national? How can you lose a national championship with Alabama?
Hold on a second. We're going to get to the Falcons side of this in a minute. And so, but the point that I'm making on the Eagles part is,
funny.
In the last 40 games, they've been held under 13 points four times.
Mm-hmm.
Two of them are the divisional game against Philly and yesterday against Philly. Like, this D-line, the way they can send in guys, you were talking about Saquon cramping up. They don't have to worry about D-linemen cramping up, even in 80-degree weather, because they don't got to play more than 35, 40 snaps over the course of the game. Like, I have a ton of faith in the defense and the other players on the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah, for me, why I have confidence in this Eagles team is because of the lines. The defensive line, as you mentioned, but also the offensive line. I mean, watching Jason Peters being back in action last night, I mean, he was beating guys to sleep. Whoever lined up at right defensive end, it was a problem. Whether it was Tack McKinley, Derek Shelby. Mm-hmm. I mean, one time, he blocked Vic Beasley in the pass coverage. That's how bad it was. But that's how dominant that offensive line.
Oh, I got the flats.
That's how, exactly. That's how dominant this offensive line can be. And if the offensive line can be that dominant, and if they can have the balance with that running game, you saw that come to life in the second half, 17 carries for 97 yards, then this Eagles team is going to be really tough to beat. We saw what they can do defensively at their best, but in the second half of that game, I saw an offense when it's at its best, when they have balance, when they can run the ball.
The Atlanta Falcons let them off the hook. I mean, that's some of the dumbest play calling I've ever seen in the red zone. When you take your shot, you take it in the high red, because what happens is when you're in the low red, it's no space in the end zone. You know, so defenders are just going to sit on routes. And instead of, you know, spreading them out, he decided to pack it in. That makes it easy because this is a physical defense.
Well, that's exactly what happened on that Rasul Douglas interception, right? He undercut the route because he was sitting at the end line.
Sitting on everything. How can you not figure out how to do a back shoulder fade to Julio Jones? They're playing over the top. They're bracketing the two inside receivers. So all you do is spread them out, and that is a perfect time to throw quick screens and draws and things like that because you have an attacking defense that gets in wide nines, that gets up the field. They're going to be overly aggressive. That's what we see Aaron Rodgers do it every week. When did he do his screens? He do it in like the 10-yard line, the 15-yard line, because you know you have a defense that's going to fire off the ball. But instead, he's trying to pack it in. I don't respect, you know, three tight ends. What threat can they do? They're going to run an out route? It's no short area quickness. You need short area quickness in the red zone. And for some reason, this dude keeps thinking he's an automatic, but he has a manual, but he can't get stuck out of second.
It's a shame you can't let us know how you feel about Matt Ryan and Sark. And again, we're going to get to them in a bit, but I want to just get back to the Eagles
still
for
on the
a
Eagles,
second.
I apologize.
No, that's okay. We bounce around and talk so much about how good all the extra pieces are on this Eagles team, except for obviously number 9, the guy in charge. Are the pieces around him, his surrounding cast, good enough that they can hold off bringing Carson Wentz back in? He may not be great. They continue to win with him somehow, some way. Is it because his surrounding cast is so good?
Well, I think when you look at the rest of that division, you know, we don't know the outcome of Travis Frederick. Mm-hmm. You know, so we don't really, we're not worried about the Washington Redskins. And then the Giants, I think they feel that they can beat them as well, even with Nick Foles, even though I know they had tight games before. So I don't rush them back because I'm not concerned that all I have to do is get in a tournament. I don't have to host every game. The problem is the NFC is so stacked with so many elite teams that are in their window right now because they have young quarterbacks, they have controllable contracts, so they can go out. Everybody went out and got these luxury pieces because they can. So it's going to be tough because every week they're going to get the opposing team's best because it's their Super Bowl. It's their opportunity to put themselves on the map. And I don't know if they are going to be able to withstand all that pressure week in and week out.
But that's why the schedule matters. Like when Coach Mangini's out here, he makes fun of me all the time for having the full schedule grid and looking at it. But it matters. If the next 2 weeks Atlanta plays Carolina and New Orleans, mm-hmm. if that's what Philly had, I would be heavily concerned, no matter how much respect I have for their offensive and defensive lines. But the next 2 weeks, Philly has Tampa and Indy. You don't need your quarterback to play well. You don't need your quarterback to play average when you have those types of big people against Tampa and Indy. Like, they can be 3-0 before Carson Wentz has to even consider coming back. This was their big hurdle. And Atlanta, which you spoke to very well, blew it repeatedly. Like, Atlanta had opportunity after opportunity to start off 1-0 and put the Philly in a hole. They didn't take advantage once again, and now Philly has, I think, two of the six worst teams in the league over the next 2 weeks. Like, Nick Foles can play for them. I mean, Nick Foles going up against Ryan Fitzpatrick in week two. Like, it's a backup versus backup. They'll be
fine. Smart guy, though. We're going to take a quick break. Bark.
Hit him with a
Bart book. Is also what your friends call you. We're going to see you a little bit later on in the show. Coming up, can Dak take the too. Cowboys to an upset over the Panthers? The NFL kicks off this Sunday on Fox as Michael Strahan sits down for a special one-on-one interview with Odell Beckham Jr. Then at 1 Eastern, the Giants battle the Jaguars, followed by America's Game of the Week as Ezekiel Elliott and the Cowboys take on Cam Newton and the Panthers. It all happens on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Check your local list.
And if you're going to be multi-screening this weekend, as I know most of you will be, if you Titans Dolphins with our guy Chris Carter on the call and Sarah Kustak on the sideline.
Hey.
We'll get to the Patriots on upset alert in a second, but first, Philly with another trick play to Nick Foles. It was sort of the Philly special.
No, this is the patch play.
This is the patch play.
This is the patch play. They might have called it the same
thing. They were low-key trolling the patch right there.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Similar place on the field, exact same down and distance. Eat that, Tom Brady, with your butterfingers. Nick Foles might not be able to pass as well as Nelson Aguilar, but he can catch better than Tom Brady.
Same game, handoff to Julio Jones and a vicious stiff arm. Watch it. Oh.
Have a seat right here, sir. I'm just going to get this first down. I'll holler at you.
Julio Jones is kind of a creative player.
He's exactly that from Madden, right?
Absolutely. Like, all right, I want to create the perfect wide receiver specs, and you come up with Julio Jones. Stiff arm's an added bonus. Eat that. Take that one with you. Oh, I love it.
Pretty good decision to trade up to get that guy.
Oh, yeah.
All right, finally, Texas high school football. Keith Miller takes a great one-handed touchdown.
Hey, now.
Then a little.
Little Odell Beckham Jr. impersonation.
All right, so let me see. Oh, that's a hell of a play. Then he stands on his head for a moment.
That's what you call a catch radius. The Hall of Famer Chris Carter would
be
proud. Is
that high school football team playing in a dome?
They're playing in the Dallas Cowboys practice facility.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's man, I used to live in Texas. I wouldn't have been surprised if they passed some bond to build this high school a dome. They spend some money on some stadiums down there.
They have jumbotrons at high school stadiums.
Unbelievable,
Kenny, we're playing a game called Take Your Pick, and today we're picking games. We start with Tom Brady, who will begin his quest to win the Patriots their sixth Super Bowl. They will take on Deshaun Watson and the Texans on Sunday. So who wins, Texans or Patriots? Kenny, take your pick.
Jenna, I'm rolling with the Texans. And I don't think it's going to be a shootout like last year's Week 3 matchup. I think this is going to be a defensive battle, and the Texans are going to come out on the winning end of this thing. Just looking at that group, if everybody is healthy, they can make life a little hard for Tom Brady. And the Patriots, they don't always get out to the best of starts. 2-2 in the last four seasons. I mean, 2-2 starts two of the last four seasons. So, I mean, if you're going to get the Patriots, the month of September is the time to do it. So I'm rolling with the Texans.
I'd be thrilled if Deshaun Watson and the Houston Texans start off 1-0, but I got to go with New England. They're 7-point favorites for a reason. They have the worst offensive line in football. I think over the course of the year, they'll figure out ways to make do, but we know Lamar Miller's not an effective runner. He can catch the ball a little bit, but when you're playing the Patriots and they know if we take away DeAndre Hopkins, what can you really do aside from throw deep to Will Fuller? I think the Pats will be able to take advantage of those situations. For those reasons, I'm going to go with the home favorite, New England. I might take the Texans plus the points, but straight to win, I'd go New England.
All right, moving on to the Jaguars. Nara heading to MetLife to take on the Giants. All eyes will be on the Jalen Ramsey, Odell Beckham Jr. matchup, which will be a must-watch 1 o'clock game on Fox. Shameless plug. So who wins, Jags or Giants? Nick, take your pick.
The Giants. The Jags start off 0-2, maybe 0-3 this year, and the route not making it back to the playoffs.
Wow.
Yeah. More on them later. I think that the Giants are just flatly better than Jacksonville. I understand there are concerns about how they're going to block the Jacksonville front, but everywhere else I like this Giants team more, and I do not see how Jacksonville's going to score on anyone this year aside from trying to run Leonard Fournette 30 times a game. I like the Giants to pull the upset.
Well, here's what's going to have to happen. The Jacksonville Jaguars defense is going to have to create field position and more possessions for their offense. I don't trust Blake Bortles as far as I can see him. I depend on that offensive line, which they upgraded, brought in Andrew Norwell from the Carolina Panthers. They made their strength even stronger. The running game, defense, creating turnovers. This Giants team is a big question mark. We really don't know what this group has to offer. They haven't been whole the entire preseason. Be interested to see what this team looks like on Sunday.
So you're going with the Jags, it sounds
I'm
like.
I'm going with the Jags.
Yeah, okay.
All right, next up, Seahawks heading into Mile High to take on the Broncos. Russell Wilson will be tested early against a tough Broncos defense. And Case Keenum, pregnant boss, will make his Denver debut. So who wins, Seahawks or Broncos? Chris, take your pick.
I'm going to go with the Denver Broncos. And I'm looking at the defense. This is going to be on those guys. They played well last year, even though they didn't get the wins to show for it. But I think with Case Keenum being as that quarterback, the offensive line being much improved, I think the Denver Broncos get it done at home this weekend.
Listen, I do not think Denver is equipped to win more than 5 or 6 games this year. I think Seattle is a mediocre NFC team, but if Seattle were in the AFC, I'd have them in the playoffs. I know Seattle has struggled on the road, but they still have Russell Wilson. They still have Pete Carroll. I wouldn't expect Earl Thomas to be a factor this week, but they still have, in totality, Earl Thomas. I think Seattle wins. This is a line that surprised me to see Denver as a full 3-point favorite when I thought this would be more of a pick 'em. I think Seattle goes on the road in a tough environment, beats up Case Keenum. He looks more like the old Case Keenum than last year's Case Keenum, and Seattle gets the win.
Mm. Did we disagree on all of those?
Well, I think they had us pick every game, and then they decided we were going to talk about the ones we had some disagreement on. That's my guess how this worked.
Next up is the AFC West matchup, Chiefs-Chargers. Patrick Mahomes will take over the reins for Kansas City while the Bolts will rely on Phillip Rivers in his 15th season. So who wins, Chiefs or Chargers? Nick, take your pick.
Everyone's got to pump their brakes on this Charger hype. My pal Shannon Sharp has him in the Super Bowl. Everyone's already just giving him the AFC West. This team ain't won double-digit games since 2008. Like, calm down on the Los Angeles Charger hype, San Diego Charger hype, enough.
Whatever.
The Chiefs, on the other hand, might have the best offense in the entire NFL. And we don't know if Joey Bosa's going to play. No, no, no. Chiefs.
What's
Chiefs,
the line? What's Chiefs. The line in this game?
The line in this game is, hold on, San Diego by 3.5.
Let me tell you something about that. We don't know what Pat Mahomes is, and looking at that Kansas City Chiefs defense, they can't stop a nosebleed. So I'm going to go with the quarterback, Phillip Rivers. I trust him. Skill position players, Keenan Allen, I like that. Antonio Gates is back. We'll see what happens.
Antonio Gates is back.
Man. They lost Hunter Henry in the offseason, so they had to bring back a tight end that he trusts. Antonio Gates can be a red zone threat. He still knows how to play football. Mm-hmm. But in looking at their defense, I like that group. Derwin James, I think, is going to be a star at safety. You got arguably the best pass rush tandem in the league.
And did you say you don't know what Pat Mahomes can do?
We don't know.
He can chuck that sucker deep, man. That's what Pat Mahomes can do.
He can also throw interceptions. See the preseason game against the Falcons.
I'm not worried about all that. Interceptions overrated.
All right. We will end with America's Game of the Week on Fox. Cowboys and Panthers. Dak Prescott's lack of weapons could hinder him in week one, while Cam Newton looks to start the next chapter of his career in season 8. So who wins this, the Cowboys or the Panthers? Chris Canny, take your pick.
I'm going with the Dallas Cowboys, and that's because I believe Ezekiel Elliott has got something to prove. He's the engine for that offense. He's going to make things a whole lot easier. And I think that Dallas Cowboys defense is really underrated. I'm looking at them as being a top 10 defense, and not just a defense that's a product of a really good offense playing keep away, but a defense that can actually be difference makers.
I agree with you entirely on the Cowboys defense. I think they're an underrated defense. I think they could have a top 6 or 7 front seven of any team in the league. However, the way to beat Carolina this year, I believe, is through the air, vertically. Take advantage of the rookie corner they're starting. Take advantage of their safeties. I don't think Dallas can do that. I think Cam Newton is poised to have a very good year after an up and down year last year. And so I've got Carolina. I also think this is a game, though, that we could look back to near the end of the season and be talking about, they don't have the tiebreaker for the wild card because they like these two teams, I think, will be fighting for that final wild card spot. So this could be an enormous week one matchup.
All right, we got a break. Much more first things first after this. Time now for some stories to start your morning. The lone bright spot for this stat sheet for the Falcons last night was Julio Jones. He caught 10 passes for 169 yards. Nick Wright, how impressed were you with Julio?
I mean, as impressed as I typically am when I watch this man play football, he is just he has almost no holes in his game. He makes hard catches, easy catches, runs perfect routes. We saw him as a runner yesterday on a toss play. I can't understand why he doesn't have more success in the red zone. Some of that has to be on him, even though I put most of it on the coordinator and the quarterback. But the only thing that he doesn't have all-time great numbers at is touchdowns. And that's obviously a pretty important number. That was the case last night as well.
Well, I know why he's struggling in the red zone is because defensive coordinators aren't going to let Julio Jones beat him in the red zone because he's a big receiver. So I think a lot of that has to be on Matt Ryan. But Julio Jones is a special, special player. And you know that he's motivated this year because he's openly probably trying to campaign for a contract. Yes. You saw they had that ugly dispute earlier. He's trying to get paid.
All right, moving on to the Colts now. Andrew Luck playing the Bengals this weekend, his first game since the 2016 season. Chris, what do you expect from Andrew Luck on Sunday?
I'm expecting Andrew Luck to be good because Andrew Luck has to be good if his team has any chance of being able to win. But I think we'll start to see the Andrew Luck that we know from when he was able to elevate his team to the divisional in the AFC championship rounds and back-to-back seasons. So I think he'll be back to the Andrew Luck that we know.
I think he will eventually get back to the Andrew Luck that we know, but I don't think that's going to take 2 or 3 quarters. I don't think it's going to take 2 or 3 games. I think it might take 2 or 3 months. I think we've got to recognize how low his low point was emotionally and physically, and how much he has to do to get back to where he was after, what, the longest he's gone without playing football in his life since he was 6 years old. So I'm hoping for health for Andrew Luck and flashes of the old Andrew Luck. I don't expect to see a full game of that yet.
Moving on to Minnesota now. Kirk Cousins will make his Minnesota Vikings debut, taking on Jimmy Garoppolo and the San Francisco 49ers this weekend. Nick, what do you expect to see from Cousins in this one?
And now, conversely to how I feel about Luck, I expect Cousins to have a monster game. I think San Francisco, outside of their defensive line, is a weak defense. I don't think they have one corner that can check Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs, much less two of them. And this is what you brought Kirk Cousins there for. So when you're up against an inferior opponent, you don't just have to lean on them defensively. You can go beat them by outscoring them as well. I think Kirk Cousins has a big opening game as a Viking.
Yeah, I think they have the skill position players to be able to do it, and obviously the Vikings believe Cousins is an upgrade from Keenum, but the offensive line still has to be a concern. You're missing Nick Easton. He's out for the season. Pat Elflein is out for this game. Brett Jones is going to be filling in for him. You already talked about talented 49ers defensive front. A lot of draft capital.
If
the 49ers are going to be competitive, they know they have to get after Kirk Cousins.
They have multiple top five picks on the defensive line.
They look like the power forwards in the NBA. Yes. That's what they look like.
All right, finally, NFC North battle. Aaron Rodgers and the Packers facing Khalil Mack and the Chicago Bears defense at Lambeau on Sunday Night Football. Whew, get excited just thinking about it. Chris, how does Rodgers match up against this defense?
I think Aaron Rodgers matches up well against any defense because he's Aaron freaking Rodgers. He's the best quarterback from a skill perspective the NFL has ever seen. But in terms of what the Chicago Bears are defensively, they got a whole lot better when they made that Khalil Mack move. Now you couple him with Leonard Floyd, Danny Trevathan, and you look at the rookie Roquan Smith. You got a talented linebacker core, defense that was a top 10 scoring defense a year ago. I think they have the ability to be a dominant defense now that they have the Khalil Mack. So if the offensive line for the Packers can keep Aaron Rodgers clean, I think this will be Aaron Rodgers having another big day.
If you look at Aaron Rodgers and his career against the Bears, the numbers are just silly. It's like 24 touchdowns, two picks at home. I think it's 14 touchdowns to one pick, and that might not be his career, but in the last 5 years against this football team, I expect Rodgers to be great. I expect the Packers to be the best team in this division this year off the strength of Aaron Rodgers. But you got to be careful now because Chicago, we didn't pay a lot of attention to Chicago last year. They brought in Mike Glennon. They still had John Fox as their head coach. They then go to Mitch Trubisky. We don't really know what to expect from them. Quietly, they had a top 10 defense last year. Now they spend a top 10 pick on Roquan Smith, who you could argue was the most pro-ready player of any position in the draft, offensively or defensively. Mm-hmm. I know he had the long holdout. I don't think that'll hurt him. And then they also add, I believe, the best pass rusher in the entire league in Khalil Mack. So this Bears team is going to present problems for every offense they face. Now, the question about the Bears this year is Mitch Trubisky any good? Like, that's what will determine what their ceiling actually is. But one of the reasons the Packers, were bummed that they didn't get Khalil Mack when they were in the market for him is not just that they didn't get him.
Is that someone
where
in Chicago
he went? I mean, yeah. Now you got to play him two games a year. Like, send him to the Jets. We'll play him once every 4 years. I think this is a big Jimmy Graham game, by the way. I think that this is to see. We heard in the offseason how Rodgers couldn't get on the same page and was frustrated with some of his young receivers. We also saw in the preseason him already having a connection, particularly in the red zone, with Jimmy Graham. I want to see how that connection looks this weekend.
How does it work? Khalil Mack is in. He hasn't been there, obviously, from the beginning. But is he just, he's got the game plan down, he's going to play it all out, he's going to feel comfortable with limited practices with this team?
Well, they're going to put him in certain situations and packages that he's comfortable with and that he understands. Right now, it's a lot to try to absorb Vic Fangio's playbook in a week and a half. So I think it's a situation where you'll see him as a pass rusher, long downs and distances, second and long, third and long, and in certain situations with the base defense. But Khalil Mack, it's all about getting to the quarterback. They're not going to ask him to drop in coverage. That's not why they gave him $141 million. They gave him that money to go hunt number 12 and all the other quarterbacks in that division. So it's more about him being able to get after the quarterback because, you know, if you're the Bears defense, the only way that you have to stop or slow down the Packers offense is to knock down Aaron Rodgers.
I would argue that if you were to tell me we're going to trade for a player a week before a game, because they got him, Saturday morning, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, 8 days before we play, any position, offense or defense, 8 days before we play, we got a player. What's the position where he's most likely to have an impact? I'd say pass rusher. Because you can simply say, listen, it's almost, or maybe shut down corner if it's a real shutdown corner and it's just going to be.
You run cat coverage.
Right,
you cover that cat right there.
The old Deion Sanders, I don't even go to the huddle. I'm just standing over here. Like, Khalil Mack can almost do his version of that. Now, over the course of the season, they will ask him to do a lot more. They'll run stunts. They'll run different things. They might occasionally actually drop him into coverage just to throw off what the quarterback is seeing. But
what his job's going to be on Sunday is every time he's on the field, go attack the quarterback. Just attack and go forward. That's what Chris was saying with sit and sick him. Like, that's what Khalil Mack will be asked to do. So I don't think the lack of practice time will hurt his ability to get after Aaron Rodgers.
All right, let's move on now to the Patriots and the Texans. The older, gifted quarterback Tom Brady facing the younger, gifted quarterback in Deshaun Watson. This game last year was a coming-out party for Watson, who threw for over 300 yards and two touchdowns against New England. Since then, Brady took the Pats to the Super Bowl, and Watson spent most of the season rehabbing his knee. Bill Belichick spoke about the challenges of facing Watson and those Houston Texans.
So they present a lot of problems from a personnel standpoint. They present a lot of problems from a scheme standpoint, and they're a well-balanced team.
Those guys, you can't make too many mistakes. You got to capitalize on red zone points, score touchdowns rather than field goals, and be able to, you know, play mistake-free as much as you can.
Probably the best quarterback of all time, one of the best coaches of all time. I mean, great team. I mean, obviously. Their track record speaks for itself. They're phenomenal. They've been doing things for a long time at a very high level. So it's always exciting to get out there on the field and be able to play against a team of that caliber. And very much looking forward to the challenge, looking forward to get back on the field myself.
So, Chris Kenny, you think that Houston can pull off the upset in this team, in this game?
Yeah, I do, because the defense. And defense travels in the NFL. So when you look at the Houston Texans, personnel-wise, they could be one of the most talented defensive groups in the AFC. So I look at them.
If everyone's healthy.
If everyone's healthy.
And everyone's healthy, right now.
Exactly. Yeah. Everybody's healthy right now. So that, you know, that's the thing that you have to look at. You saw they had an impact in that game in week three last season, yeah, when you had the strip sack from Whitney Merciless. Jadeveon Clowney returned it for a touchdown. They're going to have that kind of impact again on the game. They got to limit the points from the Patriots, though. And with the skill position players that Tom Brady has, or lack thereof, I think it's a good chance that that Houston Texans defense can neutralize the Patriots offense. Offensively, they can't have the mistakes. Deshaun Watson was right. They can't turn the football over. When they get in the red zone, they do have to capitalize. You got to score 7. You can't settle for 3, because you know eventually, if Tom Brady has enough chances, he's going to put up points on the board.
And that's what happened last year. The Texans had a lead late. Even though Deshaun had a couple picks in that game. Like, Deshaun turned the ball over a lot last year. He was just so dynamic elsewhere that he was able to overcome it. But the Texans had a lead late. They ended up not going for it on a fourth down. They obviously should have. And Brady drives New England down the field for the victory. So how can the Pats avoid the upset, if that's the question? The first thing that they will do, and I am certain this is what Bill Belichick is game planning for, is take DeAndre Hopkins out of this football game.
You have to.
He is a special football player. He has put up all pro caliber stats with a who's nobody of quarterbacks. I mean, with some of the worst collection of quarterbacks since he came in the league, we're talking Osweiler, Savage, Keenum, Yates, Mallett. I mean, it is.
You're right.
I mean, those are his guys.
He got
a 6-game respite with Deshaun Watson, and we saw and particularly Will Fuller excel. And Fuller's a deep threat, and Fuller with Watson last year had 7 touchdown catches, which seems incredible, but it's true. So Will Fuller was really good as well, but Nuke Hopkins is the guy you've got to. And I should correct that, by the way. Deshaun Watson in games Will Fuller played in had 7 touchdowns. But regardless, Will Fuller was an incredible part of that offense. But Nuke Hopkins is the guy that you absolutely have to take out of this football game. And then I expect we will come out of this game thinking the Pats front 7 is better than it is. Thinking, man, Adrian Claiborne, what an upgrade they got in the offseason. Talking about Malcolm Brown. Why? Because I don't know how the Texans block anybody. Like, the Texans have, last year, they had the worst offensive line in football, and this year I think it will be more of the same. That's why I can't pick the Texans to win this game. If you don't have a good offensive line, and Lamar Miller is a mediocre running back at this point in his career, if you only do one thing really well, the Pats, I expect them to be able to take that one thing away from you.
I hear you on that with the offensive line, Nick. That's a valid concern. But if you were to pick a quarterback and a skill set from that position that can manage that weakness, that deficiency, it would be what Deshaun Watson brings to the table. And so he's going to have to be able to make some of those off-schedule plays, being able to convert those third downs with his legs, being able to extend plays by breaking outside of the pocket, give those receivers time to uncover downfield. make those big plays in the passing game. Deshaun Watson has to be capable of pulling off some of that if they're going to win in Foxborough.
We go back and forth on how high people are on Deshaun Watson from only seeing limited action last year. It was explosive action. He played great at Clemson. But, I mean, how high are you on Deshaun Watson?
Well, you saw the control. You saw the test case last year when Deshaun Watson was the starter for that team. They averaged over 30 points a game. When he wasn't, it was in the low teens. So, I mean, he's that big of a difference for that team.
But it was 6th game. There are a lot of picks. So, I mean, do you factor that in?
You have to factor that in. You do get concerned with the turnovers, but one thing that you don't want to stop is him being aggressive. Bill Parcells used to tell Phil Simms, if you don't go out here and throw three picks, you're not trying. So it's one of those situations, because you know what your offensive line is, your quarterback is going to have to mitigate some of that. He's going to have to take some chances. You just got to be smart about the situations where he does take said chances.
Listen, if Deshaun Watson is, for the rest of his career, who he was in that 6.5 games he played, he's the greatest quarterback of all time. So, like, he's going to regress. Like, so it is not will he regress. It is how much will he regress. Mm-hmm. Nobody can keep that level of play up. We've never seen it. I'm not being hyperbolic. Like, his passer rating in those games would be the best in NFL history. His touchdowns per game would be the best in NFL history. So he's going to regress somewhat. The question is it going to be a 15% regression, which would still be a Pro Bowl level player, mm-hmm. or is it going to be a 35% Dak Prescott type of regression, where you go from lighting the world on fire rookie year to a middling quarterback? He doesn't have the help on the line and in the running game, and I also think a reason that I can't pick the Texans to upset the Pats is, once the game starts, I don't know that there is going to be a bigger mismatch going on anywhere in the NFL this Sunday than the coaching mismatch between schematically Bill Belichick and schematically Bill O'Brien. Bill O'Brien, since the day he got to Houston, has not understood and has not fixed some of the most basic parts of coaching. They lost a game against the Pats last year they shouldn't have because of this. Then the next week they lost another game against Seattle that they shouldn't have because of this. Games Deshaun Watson was in where they just could not get the clock right, get the fourth down decisions right, get the end of half right, and Bill Belichick never messes any of that up. So the Pats go into this game up 6-0 in my eyes. So, like, the Texans have to overcome even more than you would in a normal game.
The other mismatch, I would say, is trying to neutralize or stop the one guy that you know Tom Brady's going to throw the ball to, and that's Gronkowski. How did the Texans stop him?
Well, you're going to have to bracket him. You're going to have a linebacker underneath, and you're going to have somebody in the secondary over top. It's not going to be one person. It's not going to be the same two people the entire time that are double-teaming Gronk, because the Patriots are going to move him around the formation. But you have to be aware of where number 87 is. But the way that you stop him is by hitting Tom Brady. And take it from me, I've been there, I've done that. That's what you have to do if you're going to stop the Patriots offense. And the Houston Texans defensive front, they have the guys that can consistently get after it. If J.J. Watt is healthy, Jadeveon Clowney, right, Whitney Merciless, those guys, they have to be a factor. They have to be the difference in terms of slowing this offense down.
No, it's a great point by Canny, and he has the history to speak to it. But just from looking at it from afar, when you look at the worst moments for Brady, who are they up against? Baltimore Ravens getting after him, yep, right? The Denver Broncos in a couple AFC playoff games, Von Miller and guys getting after him, knocking Brady down, which is so hard to do because he gets rid of the ball so quickly. It's one of the reasons why, given the lack of continuity and established players on the Pats O-line, that facing the Texans and the Jags, because that's their schedule to start the season, that's not ideal. To answer your question, though, quickly about Gronk, the Texans brought in Tyrann Mathieu. They also transitioned a big corner, Kareem Jackson, to safety. So I think you'll see a combination of each of those guys taking turns trying to help out or to focus on Gronkowski. Oof. I still think Gronk's going to have a monster football
game. Tyrann Mathieu, I don't like that matchup.
Just too big because he's about a foot shorter?
Yeah, I don't like that matchup.
All right, we got to take a break. Coming up, is it already time for the Falcons to panic about the red zone offense? That's next. Back here, first things first, with Bart Scott. So the Atlanta Falcons lost their season opener last night. Eagles beat them in an ugly one, 18-12. Falcons continued their struggles in the red zone, only scoring one touchdown on the ground and failing to convert the final play to Julio Jones. Or in other words, right where they left off in 2017. Matt Ryan discussed his team's offensive woes last night.
So when you get your chances against a good defense like that, you've got to capitalize on your opportunities. So disappointed. I thought we battled. We fought like crazy. We knew it was going to be a tough game coming in here. It was going to be in a 60-minute game. It was that way. But it's disappointing to not leave here with a win.
Well, I'd say the psychological challenge is we got a very resilient group, all right, a really tough group of guys. So we've put a good bit of work in, and we'll continue to do that. I would expect this group, like I said in there, we'll get our ass off the mat and go back to work. We've got work to do. We'll go back in and clean those up tomorrow. But by no means is our psyche adjusted from one game.
You know what, Bart? Dan Quinn talks about the work they have to do. I thought the assumption was that they've been doing that red zone work all, you know, off season long after the way they played last year in the red zone. How worried should Matt Ryan and the Falcons be about their offense after what you saw?
Well, that was their Achilles heel, and you can't trade and get to the red zone, do all the work, and then not finish the job. And I think you have to get more creative. I saw some of those replays that they had the zero slant at the top, but Matt Ryan was looking to the bottom at all the time. You got to be creative. And I think about some of the best red zone offense that I've seen in recent history, and they all include Aaron Rodgers. And what he does is he does quick screens in the red zone. Traditionally, even before Aaron Rodgers got there, even with Brett Favre, they were tremendously, you know, great screen team, draw team, because defense is going to be aggressive, so their eyes aren't always right. I would like to see them be a little bit more creative and trying ways to get the ball to Julio. And when you know everybody knows that Julio's a great fade receiver, you have to develop the back shoulder fade. I didn't see them attempt one back shoulder fade. You know, Aaron Rodgers, again, remember, you know, the year they won the Super Bowl, back shoulder fade, you can't defend it because you can't be right. And I just think that they need to hone in on that and get more creative. And I blame it on the coordinator.
Listen, Sark was terrible at this last year. And they said all off seasons what they're focused on. It wasn't just because their season ended from a first and goal from the 9, but it was the reason they were playing in the wild. The reason they were a wild card team last year was because of lack of red zone execution. The reason they didn't get home playoff game, like, it was their entire. They were the same personnel as the team that set all the records in 2016.
Yep.
The difference was the coordinator, how well they did on third down, and most notably how well they did in the red zone. And what is so maddening to me about how they started last night, that first possession in the red zone, you got it. I know every team in the league. What does every team in the league say? We're going to be physical. We're going to be big. We're going to be physical. We're going to be strong. But you're not. And so you cannot go jumbo 3 consecutive plays against the Eagles when you're the Falcons. That gives them a schematic edge. And you're going to say, okay, first down on our first drive in the red zone, run at Devontae Freeman. Fine. Second down, run Devontae Freeman into a goal line front. Mm-hmm. Third down, we're going to be tricky. We're going to throw a pass to Devontae Freeman with Julio Jones not on the field. He wasn't on the field that entire, all 4 of those plays. Fourth down, we're going to try to spread Devontae Freeman out and have him be what? Faster than the Eagles' defense. Next drive in the red zone, at least they had Julio on the field, but they don't throw it to him one time. Like, he's your best player. Yeah. He's one of the best players in the league. If you want to run from the goal line, go spread. Make the Eagles exactly go spread. Don't go against their strength to try to prove a point that you can't prove. Like, it almost felt like macho play calling. Like, I'm going to show That's you we can is. Do this, but you can't do it.
Well, he was trying to help his team prove something to themselves. You've been preaching it all offseason. That's how your season ended, because you couldn't punch it in a goal-to-goal situation in the divisional round. So when you have that opportunity present itself early in the game, it was an opportunity for Dan Quinn to reinforce the messaging that he had been giving to these guys the entire offseason. But the only problem with that, Nick and Bart, is that those guys aren't who they thought they were.
Right.
Those aren't those guys. Do you look at the Philadelphia Eagles defensive front? They bullied the Atlanta Falcons offensive line in that situation. And the fourth down call, Nick, when the jumbo package is Devontae Freeman to the corner, I don't mind challenging the support of the defense in a run game in the goal line, but you do that in early downs and distances. On a fourth down situation, why not try to spread them out, try to run some pick plays? You saw the Eagles running pick plays. Zach Ertz got a penalty last night trying to convert on a pick play.
He was picking Grady Jarrett.
Exactly, which didn't make a whole lot of sense. But listen, if you're trying to do that, I can understand that. That makes sense as opposed to what you've been doing, what you did in the divisional round, and what you did all last night in the red zone.
You have to understand your personnel. When they have big physical guys, what you want to do is you want to wham, trap them, and use their strength against against them. You know, you saw them get the touchdown. Who was that? Coleman up the middle for the only touchdown that they had. It was a trap play, and that's what you want to do. You want to cut them on the backside, get them to move in one direction. They're big guys who can't change direction, so you want to use their strengths against them. You have to understand your personnel. And they thought that they can be the big bad bullies, but that's not how you do it. It's more than one way to skin the cat. Spread them out. You still can run all the power runs that you have. You can get that schematically by getting different personnel, by spreading them out. Then they have to match, and depending on who they bring in, that determines the play call.
So is it all play calling or is it all execution?
I think it's a combination of both, but it starts with what Nick and Bart said. You can't fool yourself. Bill Parcells used to say it all the time. Worst thing you can do in the NFL is try to fool yourself. And I think Dan Quinn.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I think Dan Quinn got caught up in trying to get his guys to believe that they could be a team that could play that kind of football with the Philadelphia Eagles. But what have we been talking about the Eagles all preseason? How their big guys are better than everybody else's big guys.
And they
The offensive and the defensive lines. They upgraded. You saw Hello to Nadia on that first goal line stand. He was a man in there. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly the type of football that the Eagles play, which is why they match up well against anyone.
And listen, some of this, a lot of this, the majority of this, I think, is Sark. But Matt Ryan, the $150 million man, he's got to take some ownership of it as well. Whether it was missing the slant that could have been for a touchdown, whether it is on what could have been the final play of the game, would have been if not for a very soft illegal contact penalty, not even giving you guys a chance. He sailed it out of the end zone like it was third down instead of fourth, or the actual last play of the game where you make it to where the only way Julio's getting a touchdown there is if it's Canadian football and the field's wider. Like, this is... Matt Ryan in the red zone yesterday was 1 for 9 with a pick. Yep. Like, that's unacceptable.
They're like a miscommunication.
0 for 3 to Julio Jones.
Let's hold on. And the pictures, maybe miscommunication, but the 1 for 9. Yeah. Since the start of last year, Matt Ryan has thrown the ball across the goal line in the end zone to Julio Jones 20 times. They're 1 of 20. One touchdown in 20 attempts, one catch in 20 attempts. For some context, it's not like Julio isn't getting the opportunities. He's got the second most in that time frame of any player in the league. The only guy with more is DeAndre Hopkins, we were talking about earlier, who for a few of those games had Deshaun Watson throwing to him, but for the other games, bad quarterbacks. He's had 23 attempts, balls he could catch in the end zone. He's got a dozen touchdowns. Julio is an amazing player, and some of this I'm sure is on Julio, but... Hey, you're going to be hard to convince me that Julio can be an A-plus player everywhere on the field, and then he forgets how to play football in the red zone. But this is, to me, I don't know if either one of you guys were ever on a team that had a bugaboo all year and ended up being the reason you lost in the playoffs. But if you did, that's what this was for Atlanta last year. To have the season start and then lose against the team that knocked them out the exact same reasons... That's the worst type of loss. To me, this was a worse loss for Atlanta than 31-3. 31-3, listen, they had the emotion. We just weren't ready. We'll be better. But now, if you're being honest with yourself, you're like, man, over a big sample size of games, we can't figure this out. That's concerning.
Meanwhile, Nick Foles is like tiptoeing out. He's like, I got to win.
Got to win.
I got
500 grand in my pocket.
Right?
$500,000 bonus.
Bart, stick around. Coming up is James Conner, the new Le'Veon Bell. That's next. Back here, First Things First with Bart Scott. So why is the Steelers-Browns game a must-watch this weekend? Well, for one thing, the Steelers are replaying the drama that played out last year, looking for Le'Veon Bell. Still hasn't shown up. So Pittsburgh is going with James Conner to fill in as running back. Then there are the Cleveland Browns, retooled and looking for their first win since 2016. Bart, I ask you, how big of a drop-off is James Conner from L. Bell?
It's like going from a Ferrari to a Caprice Classic. That's how big of a drop-off it is. It's nobody.
Don't you talk bad about a box Chevy. Don't you do it.
It is nobody better in this game right now than me, complete player. Maybe David Johnson than Le'Veon Bell. He's produced. He's such a threat. His patience, his running style is something we haven't seen. I've never seen a running back so patient and so poised, you know, with the storm around him. And also, he's probably their second-best receiver in the game as well. When Le'Veon's out there, he's such a threat. He opens everything else up for everybody else.
Listen, all we need to know is what the Steelers think of him. The Steelers have needs. Now, I think the Steelers can be the best team in the league this year, but they are not a perfect team. They still have not filled the void left by Ryan Shazier after his devastating injury. I think they need help with the safety position. Mm-hmm. They certainly could upgrade the tight end position.
if you thought James Conner, who's going to make $700,000 this year, and who you had all of last year, who you scouted closely because he went to Pitt, you drafted him not this year but last year, if you thought he was 70% of L. Bell, you don't spend $14 million against the cap this year. Not some pro franchise tag hits you all right now. That's 7% of your cap. That is a middle linebacker and a safety. That is a top-of-the-market tight end. That's Jimmy Graham. Like, there are opportunities there to upgrade your team if you think, well, we can get nearly as much production. They know they can't. They're saying this now because they are trying to spin the story and try to put extra pressure on L. Bell to show up.
Hurt feelings.
Absolutely. And, by the way, James Conner, I know he was an All-American. He was a player of the year in his conference before he had the cancer diagnosis. Mm-hmm. He is a great story, and he might end up being a really good player. L. Bell is one of the best players of his era. You know, those guys are not – it's not next man up with those guys. Yeah. No. It's never next man up with those guys.
No, and it's about his versatility. That's the thing that makes him special, which separates him from most of the running backs in the NFL. You're talking about a handful of guys that can do things that are similar to what L. Bell can do. Todd Gurley, David Johnson, and that's about it. So, I mean, it's going toward the direction of what we saw with Marshall Faulk, greatest show on turf. That's the skill set that Lev Bell brings to the table. So that's a big piece of your offense that's going to be missing in week one.
But is it enough of a drop-off whereby the Browns could actually take advantage and do some damage here?
The Browns are going to have to get out of their own head. See, I'm not concerned with the guys that they brought from the outside of the organization. I'm concerned with the guys that's inside, because what happens is, you know, they end up becoming front runners because they've seen this movie before. They've been in big games with the Steelers, and the Steelers always find a way to beat them. So they got to get out of their own head, because the first time something goes wrong, they're going to revert to, oh, we always lose to the Steelers. So it's going to take somebody getting them over the hump. They're going to have to get out to a fast start and say, okay, we can beat these guys. Because if they don't, the guys that have been there is going to say, there's Big Brother beating up on us again.
I want to ask you a question about the versatility of L. Bell before we get to the contract situation, the comments from his teammates. As a guy that played linebacker and sometimes would get split out, I would imagine, in coverage against a running back, how different is your job when there's a guy like L. Bell out there splitting out, or a guy like James Conner out there who at this moment has zero career catches?
James Conner's, his routes are going to be sloppy. They're not going to be crisp. I'm not going to respect that he understands what defensive coverage I'm in. He's not going to know if I'm bracketing him, if I'm playing outside leverage, inside leverage. I'm going to play games with him. I'm going to go up and back on him all the time. With Bell, he already knows what the defense is, because he can look over and he can see the safety, rotate the safety. Oh, he's in cover one. So if I'm going to run inside, I got to get it and turn it up. Or if he's in cover two, he knows how to break his route off, understanding that I got to maintain inside leverage. See, young guys don't understand that. Lev Bell understands the nuances of the receiver position. So it puts so much pressure on you. He's going to eat up two guys. See, they'll put me in, they'll isolate me one-on-one on what's his name?
James Conner.
What's his name again?
James
Conner. Yeah, that guy. Wow. Yeah, they'll put me out there on that guy, so one-on-one, no help. I got to get help, so that's going to open up somebody else like Juju, right?
Yeah.
It's gonna open something up for Juju. No, I know Juju. I always get Juju mixed up with Zay Jones. I don't know why.
Same round. Okay. No problem. Don't worry about it.
One was naked in the hallway.
Wow. I can't believe you worked that in there. All right.
But so it's all of a sudden, if L. Bell's out there, you guys are playing with one less defender. That's the baseline of it, right? Because two guys have to account for him.
And we got to come in the box. It's going to open everything up for A.B. and Juju, because somebody's going to get the one-on-one. And these guys proven that they can take advantage of the one-on-one. I'm trying to stop you. I'm trying to stop the run game with seven. If what's his name again?
James Conner.
James Conner's out there.
Well, here's what I'll say about
that. He didn't make my scouting report.
James Conner is not Le'Veon Bell. We know that, and it's going to be a big drop-off. There's a big piece missing from your offense. But what you do have is continuity with that group up front that's responsible for opening the holes for the running back. This is the third consecutive season that this offensive line would have been together. So I think that's going to be important in terms of trying to develop a running game, especially early in the season, knowing that you don't have Lev Bell. Last year was a down year for the Steelers in the running game, so they're looking to bounce back. That has to be a part of this group's mentality, try to have more balance on the offensive side. I think you'll see the touches from James Conner, the commitment to trying to run the football, but ultimately the difference makers for this Steelers offense are in the passing game.
Wait, quickly before we move on, how long do you think this holdout is going to last? I mean, when do you think you're going to see L. Bell?
This is tough because I think that he understands that he's a rental. He doesn't want to be abused and have them put all this workload on him, knowing that they're going to move on for him. It was disrespectful because he's looked at Antonio Brown last year, and he had a dispute. They paid him his money. Yeah. We understand the life expectancy of a running back in this game. So he's like, you guys aren't going to use me up and then put me on the market. I'm not going to be able to cash in. And I think the straw that broke the camel's back was when Todd Gurley got paid. He wasn't even asking for money. So here they are in Los Angeles, and they have a greater appreciation for him. And everybody was talking about the guaranteed money that Lev Bell was asking for. Well, Todd Gurley, they just voluntarily gave it to him. He's been better. You know, you think about Todd, he had an up year, he had a down year, he was back up last year. Lev Bell has been consistent. And then when you want to try and air out dirty laundry on me and try and say, oh, well, he's in the second step of the program, then now you're trying to assassinate my character, and you're not talking about what I am as a player on the football field and my value. So why am I going to come in? It's like being married. Right? Being married and you're getting a divorce, you know you got to move out. I'm not going to fix all those projects that I got going all over the house.
Well,
I don't care less.
To stick with the analogies you've been using all day about cars, it's how do you treat a rental car and how do you treat a car you own? If you got a rental car, like you are not putting in the expensive gas. You don't care if you hit a curb. You are smoking inside of it, windows up. Like, it doesn't matter.
Quit telling yourself.
I'll never let you borrow my car.
No problem. But it's not like there are, it's a rental car.
Yeah.
And that is their problem next week. The Steelers know that Le'Veon Bell is playing for a different team next year. They know he's a great player. And by the way, already in his career, you know who's the all-time NFL record holder for touches per game? Le'Veon Bell. So they already use him at a super high level. So I totally understand why his agent would be concerned, why he would be concerned. And one other thing that the America needs to know about how the Steelers do business. Great franchise, six Super Bowls, got it. Well, even AB accepted a terrible deal. I'm glad he got his money. He seems happy with it. But AB's guaranteed money ran out after 1 year. He is year to year with the Steelers now.
Yep.
And so the only reason he's still there is because he is outperforming the money they are paying him. The Steelers have a general philosophy. If you do not play quarterback, we will not guarantee you money past 1 year. So they leaked to the media, we offered him 4 years, 60. But with $15 million guaranteed 1 year. He's got $15 million guaranteed as is. So the Steelers don't get to play naive at this. They don't get to say, oh, the greedy player. You guys could have prevented this a couple times. You chose not to. Now, that's their prerogative. They are allowed to do business as they want. But what you can't do is do business the way you want and then expect no repercussions.
Right.
Expect the player to just fall in line. And so that is where we've got to be fair to both sides of this. L. Bell isn't a perfect player. And he is in the drug program. So if you don't want to give him money, fine. But then don't be surprised that he don't show up to work when everybody else does.
Quickly, the options are what? He comes in and signs his tender and then plays? Or what? He hopes that the team trades him somehow or offers him a contract?
He will play for the Steelers this year. The question is when.
Okay. Yeah.
They can trade him, though, but you know they can't. The next team can't offer a contract. So
it doesn't fix the situation.
What people don't know is it's an out in most contracts. It's skill deprivation. And if you don't have that in your policy, they can say, okay, you didn't run for as many yards as last year, so we're terminating your contract.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.